This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Yes, it's so good to be with you again. So glad you stopped by. As we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, and we have emerging science and the business of emerging science right now, along with open innovation. Today, our guest is going to be Patrick Diamond. Patrick Diamond of Diamond Associates has got quite a history. He's been involved in the design, development, and implementation of network protocols and technologies for over 30 years. He is going to speak at the Homeland Security Technology Conference on attacks of jamming our critical GPS systems. You can imagine how scary that can be, because we rely on GPS for everything from our coming driverless cars, our airports, and everything else. He has a fascinating view for us. He's going to be speaking at the Homeland Security Technologies Conference, as I said, April 25th and 26th. If you want to know more about that conference, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link. This year, the keynote speaker is Kay Goss. She's president of World Disaster Management, and I understand we've got another keynote speaker coming, Melissa Flagg, formerly with the Department of Homeland Security. Melissa is going to be very interesting, because we're going to interview her in a couple of weeks, so you might make a program note to stay tuned for that, or tune in again, for that. And in the meantime, if you want to listen to what Kay Goss has to say, get into our archives. We interviewed her a few weeks ago. And we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and then, of course, at the end of the program, what the listeners say it is their favorite part of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. So we really appreciate you being with us today. Thank you so much. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Right now, we're going to go to the phones, and I want to introduce you to Patrick Diamond. He's a fascinating guy. He's with Diamond Consulting now. At one time, Senior Director of Systems Integration at Semtech Corporation in Advanced Communications. He's been involved in the design and development and implementation of network protocols and technologies for a long time, about 30 years, I think he told me. Patrick is going to be presenting at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference, and his subject is going to be attacks of jamming our critical GPS systems and what we ought to do about it. And it's a real scary subject, so I want to get him introduced right now. So welcome to the program, Patrick.
Thank you, Colonel. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, attacks, let me see, actually the former title as I have is Detection, Mitigation, Recovery of GPS-Based Assured Timing Critical Infrastructure When Under Attack by Spoofing or Jamming. Now, this sounds like it could be really, really, really scary, especially with our new self-driving cars that are being introduced on the roads. And, of course, GPS is being used in all of our defense systems and things like that. So let's get elementary now. Let's get right to the very bottom of things. What are we talking about here?
Okay. With GPS, all GNSS systems, of which Galileo, the Europeans, GLONASS, the Russians, Baidu, the Chinese, and the Japanese have one as well. Mm-hmm. They're all space-based systems, meaning that there's satellites up there in varying orbits and what have you, which isn't really relevant, that have the remit of transmitting to the Earth signals that, once detected and deconstructed, represent a value of time, and from time, from very precise time, and using other information from the satellites, such as ephemeris information. The ephemeris information identifies its angularity and the ionospheric and tropospheric refraction of the signal, like light refracts through water, mm-hmm. microwaves refract when they pass through the atmosphere, so that the receiver can compute where the satellite really is, not where it thinks it is. And then there's a thing called an almanac, which is pretty self-descriptive. That's the satellite sending data to the receiver that says, this is where I'm going to be at this point in time.
Okay.
So this information is sent to the Earth. The receivers, and here's where the fly is in the ointment in my perspective, the receivers are receive-only devices. They don't communicate with the satellite. They don't communicate with anything, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They operate on a mathematical principle called a priori,
mm-hmm.
which very simply means they know the right answer before the question is asked. And they compare the data that is received from the satellite through a technique called a Kalman filter, which I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of that.
Okay.
But the Kalman filter compares the received data to, I'm going to call its table or its database.
Mm-hmm.
And if the received data matches what's in the database, then the receiver says, this is correct. And from that, it extracts precise time, one pulse per second. And from that one pulse per second period in the time domain, it says, this is where I am. That's how it works.
Okay.
A lot more complex than that, but that's basically how it works.
All right. And, of course, this is used in defense and in driverless cars and in all sorts of different things. So if an enemy decides to use cyber attack on our GPS infrastructure, there could be catastrophic damage all over the place, right?
Truly. My specific topic deals with what's called jamming and spoofing. And I'll explain what those are in a second. But they deal with a radius of approximately 10 miles. And here's why I couch that in a geographic space.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we had a nationwide jamming event, in other words, somebody with a nefarious desire produced an RF transmitter that could cover the entire United States and jam all of the GPS receivers, that problem is much larger than the proposed solution that I'm offering. That's a big problem. Not that it could happen, but I like to make sure that people realize that most jamming and spoofing events will be local in nature, because the power of the radios used to transmit the RF to spoof the receiver can't be that great.
Oh. Okay.
So it might be a watt or 2 watts or 3 watts instead of 100,000 watts.
Oh, why couldn't it be 100,000 watts?
Well, it's not that it couldn't. However, a device that can transmit at 100,000 watts in the spectrum used by the GPS receiver would be probably somewhere in the area of 100 feet tall and might take up 40 or 50,000 square feet.
Ooh, geez, okay, all right, okay. So,
you can't really hide that, right?
Yeah, so some terrorist working out of his cave isn't likely going to be able to do
no,
something like this,
no.
Okay.
No. Yeah,
it could be a nation state, you know, I mean, not to say names, but let's suppose Russia or Kazakhstan or someplace else, you know, it could be a nation state that decides they want to cause this problem.
It could certainly be a nation state, but the question that comes down to is the logistics of being able to deliver such a system undetected so that it could be brought to life and actually create the pandemonium is outside of the scope of my discussion.
Well, not only that, we're trying to say that it's so difficult to do because it couldn't. It's so hard to keep it undetected, and it could probably be taken out pretty easy with cruise missiles or something else. So, okay, this is in the scope of yours is within a 10-mile radius. Did you say?
Yes.
Okay.
So let me give you an example of a case where a jamming event actually took down an international airport.
Oh.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long ago. It was at Newark Liberty Airport. And if you go online, and if you happen to be by a computer, you can actually Google GPS jammers, and a whole list of products that you can buy will pop up on the screen.
Really? Okay.
Yes. So a lot of companies that have drivers and do deliveries and do stuff like that, a lot of companies use GPS tracking systems to know where these vehicles are and to know what their employees have been up to. Did they go where they were supposed to? Were they there when they were supposed to be there? Did they arrive at their next appointment on time? That kind of stuff, which you can derive from GPS data, okay?
And so you're saying that some of these drivers might not want to be detected, and so in that particular case, they would have a jamming device.
They are the largest customers of the jamming devices.
Hmm.
In this particular case, for a period of about 2 weeks, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, on Monday through Friday, all of the GPS systems at Newark Liberty Airport stopped operating.
Whoa.
For about an hour.
Whoa. And that was an accident, or was it intentional?
Well, it was neither. It was intentionally an accident, and let me explain what I mean by that.
help me with
that. The driver of this van was going to visit his girlfriend, who happened to live near, right next door, the Liberty Airport.
Okay.
And he didn't want his boss to know he was doing that.
Ah.
So he took his little GPS jammer, which plugged into the cigarette lighter of the van, plugged it into the van, thinking he's just taking out the GPS receiver in his van. But no, this receiver was transmitting at several hundred milliwatts, which, considering the received signal of GPS when it arrives at the Earth from the satellites, is somewhere on the order of a microwatt. Transmitting at milliwatts in that same spectrum creates noise that blocks the GPS receivers from seeing the satellites, therefore they stop operating.
Okay.
So while he was doing whatever he was doing with his girlfriend, Newark Airport's GPS receivers were down, flights couldn't take off or land, airplanes couldn't move on the ground, nothing worked. They would mysteriously came back to life. After a couple of these events, the FCC was notified something's happening. The FCC and the U.S. Navy got in their vans and started driving around Newark Airport. It took 2 weeks, but they found this van parked in front of an apartment building that was emitting all kinds of RF noise in the RF in the GPS spectrum. They located the driver, and needless to say, he got into a case of trouble, not only with his boss, but with the government.
Yeah.
But that's how simple it is to create pandemonium.
Well, then a terrorist could, let's take a drone, put it skyward, put it over an airport, and jam all the GPS at a particular airport. It could cause, airplane accidents and that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
Ooh.
And that's dangerous enough. The thing about a jammer, Colonel, is that because it's emitting a specific frequency, mm-hmm. and it stays emitting that frequency, it's fairly easy to detect the events occurring once your receivers start to behave badly.
Okay.
The spoofing issue is much worse.
Oh.
Now, remember I explained how the GPS receiver operates on the context of a priori. In other words, if it receives what it thinks is right, then it's happy with it. A spoofer, and there's a professor at the University of Texas that has demonstrated this numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
A spoofer will become a space vehicle.
Oh.
They will begin transmitting correct signals, correct in format and structure on the GPS spectrums, but the data they're transmitting is wrong. But it's the right data, but it's for a wrong place. So suddenly, a GPS receiver that's in Dallas thinks it's in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So the receiver doesn't stop operating. Its time reference gets skewed. And when its time reference gets skewed, which is the one pulse per second, it computes geospatial location incorrectly.
Well, my question then would be, these spoofing devices, you were telling me that the jamming devices are easy to obtain, but are the spoofing devices easy to obtain and to equip also?
Well,
we already know that ISIS is using drones right now to attack where is it, Aleppo or one of the places in the Middle East, and dropping bombs from these drones. So drone warfare is on both sides right now. And in America, we can get drones really cheap. Can we get these spoofing things cheap too, and are we in danger there?
Spoofing is a little more complex because it requires a computer. You can do it with a laptop and a very simply $40 constructed transmitter.
Mm.
You can buy or create the software for the GPS codes by simply going to gps.gov and downloading the information. It's all public. But somebody would have to be smart enough or capable of creating application programs that produce the data sets across the radio that would spoof the receivers. But it's certainly not outside the scope of a terrorist organization that wanted to do it. You could. The question you'd ask is why? What's the benefit of doing it? What do you get out of it? And that's something that they would have to contrive and derive on their own. I can't speak to why they would do that, but one could think of certain places where GPS is used for critical infrastructure. The one pulse per second signal, and this is a signal, is used to drive, for example, LTE radios, like the phone I'm talking on right now.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for the one pulse per second signal from GPS, it wouldn't work.
Oh, wow.
A lot of the internet wouldn't work. Computers would not be able to receive what's called network time protocol, NTP. It wouldn't be accurate if you were to go to Denver, for example, or Boulder, and spoof the GPS receivers that drive the domain name servers that control all of the NTP servers there. So there's a lot of things one could do to create disruption. And so far, the reasoning for, or you could change, for example, in navigation, you could cause a ship to take the wrong course if it's driven by GPS by giving it incorrect coordinate information or letting it derive incorrect coordinate information. Matter of fact, the University of Texas professor recently in the Mediterranean did that very thing at request of a foreign government and caused a yacht to go miles off course, and the yacht thought it was on course because he spoofed its receiver.
Well, this leads to so many questions. One is that, sure, there would be a reason to do it. Supposing somebody was going to engage an attack like was done at Mumbai not too long ago in one of our cities or any city in the world, and would want to throw off all the defense systems that were relying on GPS at that particular time so that the attack could not be detected or at least not be foiled.
Not only defense, first responder systems, they use GPS.
Oh, wow. So there could be real havoc caused by a terrorist with simple equipment.
It would be a terrible thing. No question about it.
Now, I don't want to get too far afield with this, and we can carry this on just a little further.
Well,
but before we go further, I want to ask you something. Is it possible that this might have been what happened to that flight in Malaysia that was heading to Beijing that turned around in mid-flight and ended up someplace in the Indian Ocean?
you know, that would be the question, is it possible? It's highly unlikely because the spoofing, remember I told you, is a local event.
Okay.
So, and the L5 signal is the one that's used for aircraft only. I would say probably not. I would say highly, highly, highly unlikely. I think that was done by somebody with an agenda that we don't quite understand.
Okay, Patrick, I didn't mean to throw you a curve on that, but it certainly is something that crossed my mind. So
it's a good question.
Okay.
It's a good question. So all of this unhappiness, right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about critical infrastructure. Your phone's GPS, your car's GPS, those are not considered critical infrastructure. They might be critical to you, but to the Department of Homeland Security and to the federal government, they're not considered critical. Mm. One pulse per second is used in the power grid. It's critical. It's used to create what's called UTC, Universally Coordinated Time, which is used to timestamp transactions by the financial community.
Okay.
That's considered critical infrastructure.
Yeah.
The communications networks, the wireless networks, use this one pulse per second signal to synchronize all the radios. That's considered critical infrastructure. So my question, what I postulate in my abstract and what I'm presenting at the IEEE is I'm asking a question. And the question is this. If it is critical infrastructure, why don't we monitor it? Why do we operate on a fault response basis? In other words, we don't do anything about it until it fails.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I've postulated and I'm presenting is a mechanism that is what's called out of band that will allow us to monitor the performance of the receivers in real time and detect when an event is beginning. So in other words, there's a period of time from the start of the bad behavior by the bad actor until the receiver itself is not functioning correctly. There's some time that happens.
Okay.
And there are ways to measure signals that the receivers produce to determine whether or not some event is causing it to behave incorrectly.
Okay.
And I've devised a mechanism whereby that can be done. It can be done inexpensively. It can be done universally throughout the United States. It can be done as an out-of-band signal. In other words, you don't have to do anything to your receiver. You don't have to do anything to it. And it will produce alarms and give those people that have an invested interest in critical infrastructure insight into its operation.
Well, that was going to be my next question. You know, how is it monitored? There's alarms, you say, and so somebody doesn't have to sit and actually listen or monitor something and attach a person to it, but they'll be alerted when it starts.
This is a centralized computer system that uses networking technology. It uses the one pulse per second signal that comes from the receiver. When I say one pulse per second, the precision or the periodicity of these pulses is in nanoseconds. Mm-hmm. So the period between them is so precise that the difference between one period to another period to another period is in nanoseconds, which are billionths of a second.
Well, Patrick, I would think that this sort of safeguards should be mandatory at every GPS system, you know, around the country. Let's talk more about that in the second half hour. We have to take a break, and we'll be right back. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Catherine Graham. In business, you have to know what it is like to be poor and stretched and fighting against great odds.